seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
And you're welcome along. It's a bonus Golf Weekly podcast. We are coming to you from the Golf Nacional. Nathan Murphy alongside me. It is 10 past 7 French time, 10 past 6 Irish time. An extraordinary day one is done. The net result is that Europe 5, USA 3 is how things have finished up. But that doesn't really even begin to tell the full story. For the first time in European Ryder Cup history, there was a complete whitewash in the foursomes, which was the evening session. USA took the morning four ball session 3-1, and then against everybody's expectations, frankly, Europe came out and whooped them 4-0 in the afternoon. And we've just had our four balls for the morning announced. I'm sure if you're downloading this podcast later on this evening or tomorrow morning, you'll know them already. But it's Rory and Garcia thrown together, played together before, of course, in the Ryder Cup. Kepka and Finau back together again. That's our first match. Match two tomorrow is going to be Casey and Hatton back together again. And DJ and Fowler back together again. Mollywood.
Don't do it, Joe.
Mollywood are together. Molinari, Fleetwood back out again. Back out together. 2 points from two today. And look who they're playing against. Only their old friends from this morning. Patrick Reed and Tiger Woods. That's going to be interesting. And then Poulter and Rahm together. That will be a low-octane pairing. against Speed and Thomas, who are back out again. So we'll touch on how the four balls are going to go. Tomorrow, but
what it probably
today
sums up actually,
yeah,
the four ball pairings for tomorrow, because the USA have gone with the exact same four ball pairings for tomorrow as they went with for today, not in the same order, but it is the exact same four ball pairings. Is that the captaincy is a throw it all up in the air and you get lucky, because both of them had a plan, and it seems as though Jim Furyk is sticking to his plan no matter what.
Yeah.
He looked at what happened this morning. They've all played well. He made changes for the four balls, some of which maybe he now regrets, not putting out Tiger Woods, not putting out Patrick Reed. So he's gone back to the tried and tested. And Thomas Bjorn faced a huge decision earlier. Mm. He's also stuck to the plan.
Yeah.
Because he was in the press conference. He was asked about Rory McIlroy, who played shockingly poor this morning. And if it was any other player, I think would have been dropped.
Yeah.
But he said, my plan was always to play Rory, and I wasn't going to break with my plan.
Yeah, he just said that in the press conference there. Rory was always going to play, and so he didn't change the plan. So he stuck completely to the plan. The opposite, really, what Clark did 2 years ago when he threw out McIlroy and Peters in the afternoon session when they were 4-0 down. Again, maybe 4-0 down is a bit scarier than 3-1. We'll get to what happened today in just a second. Some of the tweets. Interestingly, Gary Kitley has just tweeted at Golf Week.
Hi, Gary.
OTB. And he said, get yourself out of that media tent and into the village ASAP. Eddie Jordan has just started an Irish party in the beer tent. So that's us done for this evening, Nathan.
That was a great pod.
It was a good
great
podcast.
This is the first time I've had a podcast and a glass of wine in my hand.
It's no joke.
We get
joke.
€35 every day in the media centre to spend.
Yeah.
Now, you know, they throw out the €35 and you think, great. Mm-hmm. And then they charge you £14 for a sausage and a rasher.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. But I had €5 left, and this cost €3.50.
Let me get a quick photo. I think this could be the photo cover for the podcast. Yeah, no, it sounds like £35. I can't eat all that food, and you go through it pretty quickly.
They don't have a great selection. As somebody who spends a lot of time in press centres, I've had the same meal twice, which is not fun.
No.
And there's no sweets. And I have a very sweet tooth. I need something at 4 o'clock to get the energy levels back up.
They ran out of chocolate and buns and
nothing,
pastries.
Nothing.
Nobody wants to hear this. You sip on your free wine for a second there. So, shockingly similar uniforms on both teams today, Friday. No idea why Europe went for navy and red.
Because we're in France.
Says Peter Dwyer. Oh, well spotted. Good point, you.
And I don't know if you've seen, I'll try and drag it up between now and the end, what they're wearing tomorrow is even closer. They're wearing pretty much the exact same uniform.
Right. Paul Murphy, lads, it's rocking in O'Paris Irish pub in Versailles. Are you joining a load of friends of the pod here for a drink or two tonight? Paul Murphy wondering that. We're in Versailles. It's
No, he said they're in Versailles. Shit. You had your excuse planned there, didn't you? You're like, oh, we'd love to. I would be there in a heartbeat, but we're miles... Oh, it's right in the centre of Versailles.
We've surprised ourselves. We've gone for drinks, boat nights. I wasn't actually thinking we would do that, to be honest. Didn't think it'd be that kind of vibe, but we have boat nights. Bloody hell, the alarm went off at 5 a.m. this morning. It's been a long-ish day. We'll see. So, some pot bunker at the first, says somebody. Didn't notice that. And maybe you've discussed this before, lads, but any idea why Rory wears a hat in every tournament except for the Ryder Cup? Noticed watching highlights at Hazeltine too. Well, one clue, my friend. Money.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, does it suggest that...
He has to wear the Nike hat because...
I know, but do you think then, if Rory had a choice, that he would go all Robert Rock in it?
Yes.
Do you?
100%.
Do you think most players would?
Yeah.
All right.
It's very uncomfortable wearing a hat for 6 hours a day, every day.
Yeah, I suppose. Americans are used to it.
They wear them indoors.
But Americans wear baseball caps at everything. Like... as part of their day-to-day life, they always have a baseball cap on.
Isn't that right? Yeah, 300 million of them.
Well, listen, a good chunk, all the jocks who've turned up at the Ryder Cup. But I was more wondering, does it reinforce the value of the Nike brand that he's never wearing anything else?
No.
That it's very noticeable.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, he's just clearly...
Maybe I'm overthinking it.
Yeah, contractually doesn't have to. Grand, I'm not going to bother. Tom Griffiths, speed 500 through 7. Average.
I told Peter Lauer, I WhatsApped Peter earlier and said probably turn off your Twitter notifications for a little while.
Yeah, Kerry GAA were thrilled to see some Kerry jerseys in the crowd. It's obligatory at this stage.
I saw two of them wandering around earlier on, alright.
Sean Clancy, out of curiosity, were tickets needed for the first tee grandstand this morning? No, I think it was first come.
No, there wasn't, because I know, so there was the main area was full at 6 a.m. right behind the tee.
Yeah.
A full hour and a half beforehand, but... the area to our right was showing up in television has been quite empty early on, because I think that was more a reserved corporate type area.
Yeah.
But you could just rock up.
Brian Dowd, where can Friends of the Pod find you at Le Golf National? Generally in this exact
yeah,
spot.
Come to the media centre and we'll... and you can...
You won't be
face
allowed.
Security,
you won't
so
be allowed
that's
in.
Not our issue. I mean, we'll see you in the pub tonight.
Yeah, oh, Paris and Versailles. We've gone out a few times. You went out more than me. I mean, to be honest, I was so thrilled by the morning session... I didn't want to move. I didn't want to miss a shot. I wanted to get the commentary and everything. But she went out, and I went out with you in the afternoon. And as you can see from the TV, this thing is just so hilly that, frankly, there are vantage points everywhere.
Well, you are probably chastened by your experience at Gleneagles, where we went out a few times and barely saw anything.
Yeah.
Whereas this is totally different. I think the European Tour, the Ryder Cup organisers have realised that you need a lot of big screens.
Yeah.
And there must be 20... giant jumbotrons around the place. So I picked a spot on the 10th, on the 10th fairway, up in a little mound where you could see the approach shot to the 9th, the tee shot on the 10th, you could see the 10th green, and if you just walk 20 metres, you could see the 12th.
Yeah.
So I ended up, for the moment of the morning for Europe, with Justin Rose. I was standing right behind him when he managed to chip in on the 12th. But also, there's a huge screen right beside you as well, so you see everything else that happens, which makes a massive difference.
Totally agree. It's the big lesson, actually, they've probably taken from Gleneagles. And I presume technology makes everything easier, but the big screens everywhere means you can really just watch this thing on TV and then see the four matches go through whatever given hole you're doing at the time. One of the interesting things about this course when it was built, I just heard on somewhere, I can't remember, you listen to so much media or whatever over the couple of days, but when they were building the course... in the 90s, there was loads of construction housing being built in the area at the time, and so they made a bit of a deal with the construction companies that all your excess landfill and all the muck and soil and all bits and pieces that you want to get rid of, dump it over here, and we'll shape what was, I think, a cornfield at the time, a very flat cornfield, into this fantastic undulating up and down course with vantage points everywhere. And I mean, geez, between the TVs and the hills, I think most people will say that's about as good as you can make golf spectator-wise in 2018. And Connor Moore, a.k.a. Connor Sketches, wants to come on the pod anytime, he says. Someone was saying you should come on. Hashtag friend the pod, he says.
Well, it's weird, Connor, because we're doing a daily pod. So generally you could say that, and he may hope, like some friends of the pod, that we don't turn up for the next 3 weeks and it's forgotten about. But we're here, Connor. You're here. We literally met you. You took time away from your fans for a good 2 minutes to acknowledge our mere presence now that he's a global superstar. So, yeah, we're here. We're right here in the media center. I'm sure they'll let you in. He doesn't even need to do any impressions. I say that.
Sheelan Strain tweeted finally to say, not a fan of those yellow, abysmal yellow tops that,
well, that was terrible
Europe
yesterday.
Were
that
yesterday.
That was not pretty.
So let's flick through the day then. I mean, you can stop and jump in wherever you want. So, I mean, we started with I was going to call it ceremonial. It feels ceremonial, but it's anything but. The tee shots this morning, we arrived in at 5 a.m., got here at 6, got a nice bus, and it was darkness. And you did the smart thing. I spent too much time. I wanted to make sure I had a place. And so I was there 45 minutes, standing out there for 45 minutes, listening to some French dude with an accent and some horrible DJ just revving up the crowd incessantly, like really incessantly. And you were at the driving range watching Justin Johnson strike it, which seemed like a better use of time. But however, we got there to 10 past 8 French time.
Rory McIlroy turned to Luke Donald on the range and said, somebody needs to change that DJ.
Yeah. So, I mean, 6,500 people. We both felt that, I think, that it was a different atmosphere to 4 years ago. Gleneagles, it felt more intense. I mean, we all expected, we had big expectations of this 6,500 people stand all around the first tee. Gleneagles felt incredibly intimate. You know, if I was to use an overused analogy, it was an old school League One English football ground. We were tight in around the sidelines. Yeah. We were close to the pitch. Whereas this was a bit like the Etihad on a Champions League night. I felt very far away. A lot of the atmosphere escaped. Now, maybe if we were down closer, because we were quite high up, it would have felt amazing. But
I saw a good description that Gleneagles was like Upton Park, and this was like the Olympic Stadium for West Ham fans.
I mean, I really just did that.
That was better. But do you know, my feeling of actually Gleneagles was that Gleneagles felt for a little while like the minutes before an All-Ireland final.
Yeah.
This tension and everybody knows something special and spectacular is about to happen.
Do you know why? Because at Gleneagles, they didn't have some idiot with a disco.
Did they not? They surely did.
No. If you think
about it now.
They played
the Proclaimers. They had to.
No, they didn't. I was thinking about this all day. I was like, why was it better? And it was because they didn't rev up the crowd. They just let it happen organically. If you remember what they had, there was a bunch of Swedish lads who were great singers, and they got them on mic to sing a few songs. And then McGinley just walked out, I remember, and there was a big applause. And it was like a big amount of noise. It was actually kind of quiet for about half an hour. And there were a few murmurs and conversation. And then players started arriving, and the atmosphere really built up naturally. Whereas here, it was like it was like being in a disco.
I've been at a disco.
A nightclub.
And I haven't been to one in years. And I don't want to return to one at 8 o'clock on a Thursday morning.
But, you know, suddenly the contrast with, loud music pumping and this lad screaming at us every 5 seconds, suddenly that all came down. And
what's left?
Then the silence almost, it felt quiet by comparison. Whereas Gleneagles,
right.
They ramped it up the right way. Whereas they went totally downhill here. So anyway, that's a minor complaint. Anyway, off they went. Kepka Finau against Rose and Ram. DJ and Fowler against Rory Ullison. Spieth and Thomas against Casey and Hatton. And then the only European win, Molinari and Fleetwood beat Tiger and Patrick Reed.
Maybe we just flick through...
Your takeaways, please.
Well, I was going to say, if you go from top to bottom...
Yeah.
So even off the opening tee, it was interesting. Justin Rose and John Ram. Actually, Brooks Koepka and Tony Finau go out first. So all week we'd sort of heard that the water on the left wouldn't really come into play because nobody's going to be hitting driver, nobody's really going to be hitting a wood at all, and more than likely you're having to hit 290, 300 yards to reach it. Tony Finau goes up with a 3-iron, lands an inch from the water, and goes, wow, wasn't ready for the adrenaline. Brooks Koepka just stripes it straight down the middle. Justin Rose hit an unbelievable approach on the first to put Europe one up. You could see straight away from those opening groups that an awful lot of the best players played well in the morning four balls. Dustin Johnson striped his approach on the first. Missed the putt. And that, Jim Furyk is doing his press conference at the moment. I wonder, will he be asked about one of the sort of undercurrents of the day that may raise its head if the USA don't win this, which is that Dustin Johnson changed his putting grip at the Tour Championship. And over the past 4 days, never in his life had he changed it previously. So he's now going with his left hand below. Why? Why would you do this?
It does seem like a ballsy move. I was looking. I'm not sure he was doing that for the whole round.
You mean he might have been changing?
I don't want to throw that out there. I need to clarify. But he's definitely tinkering with his pudding, which is a scary prospect for him.
Now, we do have to say he did win the morning four balls.
Yeah, whooped them.
But
4-2.
On that very first hole, he missed a five-footer.
Yeah.
Not even.
Yeah.
And he missed a load of putts during the foursomes.
We expressed some concerns. So Fowler and... just to finish, Koepka and Finau. I mean, Finau had a great bit of luck on 16. You'll have seen it one way or another through highlights. He should have went in the water. He hit the wood, bounced up and, you know, landed 5 feet from the pin and got booed, which is not great. And they pipped Rose and Ram right at the end. Rose and Ram led all the way through, played brilliantly, and USA win that one by one. Fowler and DJ, Hockey, McIlroy and Olsson. I mean, the story was less DJ and Fowler. They didn't put together an outrageous number of birdies. It wasn't the lowest scoring match of the four that morning. The story was that McIlroy and Olsson were quite dreadful, really. They managed two birdies between them, both of them coming from Olsson, the rookie. They lost 4-2. McIlroy not a single birdie. And it wasn't just bad putting for McIlroy. Every area of his game didn't seem too hot.
It was his driving that killed him. From what I saw out in course and from what I watched on TV, he was hitting it right every time. And that's what's different about this Ryder Cup to probably pretty much every previous one, maybe all the way back to Valderrama.
Yeah.
That if you go in the rough here,
yeah,
you are losing that hole more than likely.
It's US Open-esque rough. Mm. I mean, you can't reach greens. We've seen players go into rough maybe 20 yards offline and they'll have a swipe at it and just pick up their ball afterwards because they're out of the hole in the four
and
ball.
That happened Rory twice. Mm. Twice he tried to hack out of it and it went 30 yards.
Yeah, no, it's serious stuff. It's scary. And we'll get on to Phil Mickelson. match three, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas against Casey and Hatton. This was a round of two halves, really. Jordan Spieth owned the first nine holes, five birdies in seven holes. I mean, what? Talk about rising to the occasion. He is
couldn't miss a putt.
Scary, yeah. And then Thomas waiting with two birdies straight after. This one looked done. And then Paul Casey, welcome back. Birdies on 9, 10, 11, 12. He had five birdies in total. So they only won this by one in the end, Spieth and Thomas against Casey and Hatton. So Casey and Hatton go out again tomorrow. They obviously did enough and they played pretty well in the end. And then so Tiger Reid versus Molinari Fleetwood, a European win. This was almost the tense match, really. This ebbed and flowed both ways. Initially, Europe led, then Tiger and Reid led by two, and then Molinari and particularly Fleetwood roared back. I mean, we were Fleetwood. Molinari's first full point from a single match in the Ryder Cup, and then Fleetwood, rookie come good.
And the importance of this match at that time,
yeah,
because USA were leading 3-0. There was a moment, they were all square with four to play. It could have been a 4-0 whitewash for the Americans in the morning. But all throughout it, it was always tied. It always went one way, the other way. Molinari and Fleetwood were exactly what we expected from months on end. Fairways and greens.
Yeah.
Fairways and greens. And sometimes they hold their birdie putt. Sometimes they didn't. Woods and Reed played very well. Just when it came down to it in that last few holes, Tiger suddenly looked tired. Again.
It's inevitable. When you think about it now, and this is going to be one of those hindsight arguments, of course it is. He must be wrecked.
Well,
he must be shattered. He's done all the... I mean, he's had a big year, and he did all the FedEx playoffs. He played a lot. And then that win on Sunday, that was a grind in the end. I mean, I know he won by a few shots, but I mean, there were tough conditions on the Sunday. He was tired. He looked tired on the Sunday. He's flown over. He's 42 years old. They all have jet lag, even the younger players. And he's thrown out there. Shattered.
They played some really bad shots over those last two or three holes, Woods and Reed. Was it 15 where Woods was in the semi-cut and Reed told him to lay up?
Yeah.
Tiger does, lays up perfectly, and Reed puts his approach straight in the water. So they played a lot. And that's got to be a bit of a concern for Furyk with Tiger, in that we've seen that for the last 9 months, that Tiger, on a Sunday, gets to the 12th, 13th, and then seems to fade a little bit.
Like, I'm not sure you can put him out twice tomorrow. We may see Tiger just play three sessions.
They may need to.
Hmm.
And you hope that he somehow drags it out of him.
So the, it's extraordinary how quick the turnaround is between sessions. You're talking 10, 15 minutes. Like, I literally watched Dustin Johnson on the first tee thinking, how are you still? Time for a sandwich tops and an energy drink, and they're straight back out there. And the wind picked up, much tougher conditions, I would say, in the afternoon. 20 mile an hour winds. So the wind was significant, and then the rough is very penal. So Rose and Stenson 3-2 over Johnson and Fowler. McIlroy and Poulter 4-2 over Watson and Simpson, who came out, they played together before, they came out for the afternoon session. Garcia and Noren, in some ways they're the story, Garcia and Noren. They were 7-up at one stage over Mickelson and DeChambeau, a partnership that nobody can make much sense of, Mickelson and DeChambeau. And then Molinari and Fleetwood straight back out, 5-4 against Thomas and Spieth. That's actually a phenomenal performance. 5-4 against Thomas and Spieth. I did the maths.
Go on.
So the Americans, 11 over par combined in the afternoon sessions. 11 over par. Now, nobody finished the 18 holes, obviously, so there were still 12 holes left for them to inflict more damage on themselves, and they were already 11 over par. I'm not saying the Europeans didn't play very good golf in the conditions this evening in the evening session, but for some strange reason, the US almost capitulated. McGinley was talking on Sky Sports there, saying they looked surly, didn't like the body language, couldn't get over. He almost felt they gave up, they threw in the towel. He said they weren't embracing the tougher conditions. They weren't embracing a golf course, which they don't particularly like. They weren't embracing the crowd. They were just not enjoying it. And he said the body language from Furyk down wasn't good, which was strong language from McGinley. So, I mean, I don't know. Where do you start? Mickelson DeChambeau was a horror
show.
There's
a lot to read into all of this. And you almost find yourself contradicting. I find myself contradicting myself almost within the same podcast, and you hope with Ryder Cups that people never remember statements that you make earlier in the week about things.
Well, it's important to say you are drinking wine.
Well, I've had one full glass there. Is that even a full glass? I'm not quite sure.
Probably cost you £12, did it?
Well, my last $3.50. We're in France. This is the cheapest place for a glass of wine compared to Versailles, where they'll charge you £8, unless we go to where all the friends of the pod are and they might buy us a drink. Because remember, we don't get paid for this show, so
surely au Paris in Versailles do not charge £8 for wine.
We shall see. But you talk about that quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Rory, everything about him is Rory at his worst, in that he's not playing well. His general demeanor is that he's bloody fed up. He's not dragging Thorbjørn Olsen through this. Bjorn, I don't know how aware you are as a captain of the noise outside, where everybody is suggesting and asking the question, has he got the balls to drop Rory? He's not playing well. His head isn't in the right place. And he didn't. He went with him again. So he needs a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
Because Rory did. He's not playing anywhere near his best golf, but he did enough to get through. And it would have been a huge story if he had dropped McIlroy for the afternoon. But you're right. Phil is the story. And we said this last night. We were here with Andrew Cotter. You can understand what Jim Furyk wanted to do. Look at the strength of those four-ball pairings this morning and tomorrow morning. But where did Phil fit into that?
Here's how Phil and DeChambeau went. Par on the first, not a difficult hole.
Par on the first, where Phil very nearly went in the water.
Correct, yeah. Bogey on two, bogey on three, then a par. Bogey on five, then another bogey on the eighth. And it was the 10th hole before they managed a birdie. And then another bogey, and then they managed two late birdies. But the match was over then on 14. Like, if you didn't see any of Phil and DeChambeau, because I appreciate people are busy and working and various bits and bobs. I mean, Phil was taking an iron off certain tees. And I mean, he snap hooked into water and just put them out of the hole. So even on tees where he was leaving the driver in the bag. So we said maybe this course might suit Phil in a sense, because he'll get away with not having to hit driver. He was just all over the shop. I couldn't. I mean, look, it's been an amazing evening for Bjorn, in that the Garcia selection is completely vindicated. Like Garcia and Noren, that's the match where, regardless of how Mickelson and DeChambeau were playing against Garcia and Noren. So even if Mickelson and DeChambeau had played relatively well, they were still against Garcia and Noren. Garcia and Noren came out and went birdie on three, birdie on five, birdie on six, birdie on seven, birdie on eight. So through nine holes in foursomes, not four balls, Garcia and Noren were 5-under par. So it was a serious performance. So with the McIlroy choice, sticking to the plan and putting Rory back out, and with the Garcia selection, and also with unearthing the Molinari-Fleetwood combo, which will be around for the next 3 to 4 Ryder Cups, it has been a fantastic evening for Bjorn, and Furyk's probably getting some tough questions. Like, I don't know, there's hindsight arguments. Were you looking at Mickelson DeChambeau saying they were screwed beforehand?
Why?
I'm just wondering, like... So
oh, sorry, yeah. But I definitely looked at the pairings and thought, Europe will expect to win and probably level it up, because it just didn't make any sense, Phil, on this course in foursomes.
Yeah.
And himself and DeChambeau, I don't know, maybe they did click, maybe there were signs there. But everything earlier in the week was that it'd be Tiger and DeChambeau.
Yeah.
And, like, Furyk now has probably a difficult team meeting tonight. There's no way he can play Phil tomorrow.
Because
he cannot play Phil tomorrow.
Phil did foursomes, if I remember, first day out at Hazeltine with Ricky Fowler, and they got on very well. They had a good rapport. Yeah, I didn't really see much between Mickelson and DeChambeau on the course. I mean, yeah, it's a really difficult night for Furyk.
It turns very quickly, though. Like, again, Rory's a prime example. Standing on that first tee, I don't know if everyone saw it, but that moment where he's getting his photograph taken with Ian Poulter, and he literally won't lift his head, and they lose two of the first three holes, and you're thinking, this is the worst decision Bjorn has ever made.
Yeah.
But they turn it around, and again, Bubba's not playing his best golf. You do wonder if foursomes are for him on this course, but does he sit out Bubba and Mickelson again tomorrow? I guess a lot will depend on what happens tomorrow morning, but it was just blistering. It just, in a space of half an hour, it went from game's been one up, two up, to four and five up.
Yeah. It was a fairly extraordinary first day. It surpassed my expectations.
Mm.
I was really worried we were sitting here and staring down the barrel of a long weekend and a slow countdown to an inevitable US victory. Whereas now, anything could happen. Again, the four balls for tomorrow. Thoughts on these? Rory and Garcia?
They played together before.
Yeah.
They get on very well.
Yeah.
It's a real strong first tee, Saturday morning. Atmosphere is up.
Koepka and Finau, they're up against. They didn't blow anyone away today.
No, they got very, very lucky when they beat Rose in that first match.
And
they
Ram,
only led on 18. And as you say, an absolute fluke on the 16th. Koepka couldn't seem to come to terms with greens at all.
Yeah.
Finau looked nervous. And also, there was a moment that Koepka looked shook after where he clobbered some lady, smash on the head, just above the eye. Photographs of her just lying prone on the ground. At that stage, you could be fearing the worst. And the next two holes, he hit two horrible drives.
Strange thing to say, Finau, for a guy who had a chip in eagle and I think three other birdies, is not actually hitting the ball that well and that consistently. So that gives Rory and Garcia a big chance. Look, Rory still didn't hole much.
Oh no, he missed putt after putt after putt. And in the same way he's been missing them all season.
Oh, listen, the hand, I thought it was going to break that way. Or how did that not go in? And so look, Rory will be feeling better this evening, but I think deep down he will be saying to himself, this still isn't quite right. So Garcia was sublime today. Garcia, amazing. So that's the first match, Casey and Hatton against DJ and Fowler. That was tough enough to call. Like, Casey went into Superman mode for the back nine this morning, and Hatton played very well. Hatton finished superbly. He hit a fantastic tee shot on the first. Hatton had a really, really solid debut. He won't get credit for it because he didn't win this morning, but he was really, really good. Stitched one on 18 to almost save that match. They're against DJ and Fowler.
I'd imagine that Bjorn was very, very happy with Casey's performance in general.
Yeah.
Because you could see constantly he was putting the arm around Hatton. He was telling him all the right things, that even when they were struggling, just trying to keep it going. DJ and Fowler, like, Fowler hasn't really come to life yet, it doesn't feel.
No.
DJ with the putting stroke could go and win that 5-4 or else get ground down.
Yeah. We have Molinari Fleetwood versus Reed and Tiger part two. Going to be interesting. I mean, that match was back and forth all day. Molinari and Fleetwood, I would think, are in love with each other and life right now. And then Poulter and Rahm versus Spieth and Thomas. Rahm, great fun today. Wanted the crowd going. He did a great interview afterwards. I think you were out trying to chase someone down or do something. Rahm was saying, look, my logic is I want the noise up because then I don't hear any sudden noises and there's that many people that something's going to happen and it'll distract me. He says, I do the same thing in Phoenix on the 16th all the time. So he was like, get the noise going. So Poulter and Rahm against Spieth and Thomas. Poulter had a pretty good day today.
He played one match. He won one match.
Yeah.
He delivered.
Putts, yeah.
Which is, and
they call him the postman,
cards,
you know.
Do they? Somebody should mention that.
He delivered.
Bloody hell. Listen, Garcia and Poulter more than justified their presence here today.
Yeah.
So what'll it be like? I do wonder if part of that is thinking that it's the last match. What a spark Poulter and Rahm could bring to the entire place.
Mm.
Spieth and Thomas, brilliant this morning. Did nothing in the afternoon.
Yeah.
That's the Ryder Cup for you.
Hard to know what to expect. So final thoughts or anything else you want to add as we go into day two? I mean, beyond just thank God this has turned out to be a much better day than we thought it was going to be around lunchtime.
It slipped completely. Now I'm looking at those pairings going, God, I hope Europe don't win 3-1, and suddenly it's not very exciting.
Isn't it amazing? It makes no sense to me, really, the foursomes four-ball thing. Like, why Europe are so much better. Mm. I think the last number of Ryder Cups, I just saw the stats, so I'm doing the maths in my head, you're adding another 4 points on. I think it is, in the foursomes, it is Europe 20.5 points to USA 9.5 points. And then in the four balls, obviously in the four ball, I mean, it makes these are brilliant US players. It's not that mental a format for them to get their head around.
No.
And the European team just managed to do something. So.
And yeah. It felt, coming into this, that they were more of a team than ever before.
If you think that the US team are still the better team singles, how many points do you want Europe ahead going into the Sunday to feel good about their chances?
Probably about 3 anyways, I would think. Now,
if they were,
what I thought yesterday.
Yeah.
Now I've watched Phil Mickelson play.
Yeah.
And I've watched Bubba Watson and Webb Simpson and Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. But as Andrew Cotter would say when he was here last night, it's all nonsense.
It is nonsense.
We could be sitting here tomorrow night and the score is 8-8.
Yeah. Do you know, one last point, because I said it to you, so I'll mention it quickly. Another reason why captaincy is just nonsense, right, is because you're. I mean, it's not even like, you know, Manchester United versus Chelsea, where they'll have a vague idea what the opposition are going to do and try and plan for each other tactically. This is completely blind. Mm. You don't know who you're playing. It's like Manchester United, you're going to play a team on Saturday, so you'll find out 5 minutes before, and you can't do anything.
You don't know if that team will have Ronaldo in it or not.
Yeah. So, like, McIlroy and Poulter, we're now saying, is a vindicated decision. And we're saying that Mickelson and DeChambeau is an awful decision. But, like, if McIlroy and Poulter were against Mickelson and DeChambeau, it would have been, you know, a tight enough match. Mm. It just so happened they got a bit of luck that Garcia and Noren got Mickelson and DeChambeau, and that McIlroy and Poulter got Bubba Watson and Webb Simpson. And, like, would they have planned to have Molinari Fleetwood against Reed Tiger again? You know, the blindness of, okay, I'm picking a pair, and I don't even know what pair they're going up against, just further strengthens the Andrew Carter argument that it is just...
It's all a load of bollocks.
Yet again,
we managed to travel all the way to France and record a podcast for an hour talking about it.
So I think we need to go and catch a bus and get back to Eau Paris in Versailles.
VIP bus.
It really, really isn't. So...
No, it was.
Oh, yes, sorry.
This morning we were on the VIP bus.
It lagged away on. It was awkward. Why would you broadcast that?
Well, I don't know. It was a bus going... To the course from Versailles.
If we don't get on that.
Do you think they're going to have our picture on the front of every bus going, do not let these guys on?
So that's us done. We'll try and do another pod tomorrow. I think Paul McGinley might join us at some stage over the weekend.
Just Jim Furyk has just been in for the press conference, so a couple of people tweeting about it. Right. Rick Riley says, from talking to Jim Furyk, the guess here is that Phil Mickelson can schedule the full tour of Versailles tomorrow, plus the Louvre as well, because he ain't playing.
Yeah. It was a shocking display from Mickelson. And in hindsight, he shouldn't have been picked.
And in hindsight, Phil, maybe it's a little bit of karma for what happened at Gleneagles 4 years ago.
Back on European soil, Phil.
The ghost of the still alive Tom Watson.
Oh, dear. Right.
Let's go. What's that pub we're going to?
Eau Paris in Versailles.
You'll need convincing, but we'll get you there.
Okay.
It'll be good for your ego, Joe. It'll be good for your ego.
Try and do a podcast tomorrow, and if not, we'll certainly try and record something on Sunday for 20 minutes or so, and we'll talk to you then. Spread the word that the podcast is daily over the next few days. Good luck. Go and tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket town. JD Starter kid right here.